Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Amber Tamblyn's directorial debut, Paint It Black, will screen twice at the Woodstock Film Festival. The actor, poet, and now director will also participate in the festival's Women in Film and Media panel. Based on the novel of the same name by Janet Fitch, Paint It Black explores and explodes the confusion of grief when Josie's boyfriend, Michael, commits suicide, and his death brings Josie into the orbit of his powerful and powerfully cold and heartbroken mother, Meredith. Their strained relationship circling around who knew Michael better, who loved him more, and what they can get from and do to each other now that he is gone.
So, did you ever take Michael to lunches like these?
When he was a little boy, yes. But later on, he couldn't bear it. Too many fat cats. I bet he never once took you to a decent restaurant.
No. We mainly just ate at home.
You poor thing. Michael couldn't boil water.
Michael was a great cook, actually.
Tamblyn co-wrote the adaptation with Ed Doherty. It stars Alia Shawkat as Josie and Janet McTeer as Meredith. A quick note before we begin, this interview was recorded prior to last weekend when Amber Tamblyn shared a personal story of sexual assault as a reaction to and condemnation of behavior and language highlighted in recent news stories about Donald Trump. Amber Tamblyn, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. How did you first encounter Janet Fitch's book, Paint It Black?
Janet Fitch's book was actually recommended to me by Amy Poehler. Amy's been a longtime friend. I've known her for over a decade at this point. And I remember I was on tour with Neil Young, who is a very good family friend, and my dad was directing a stage show that he was doing. And I remember exactly where I was when I got the text from her. I had a Sidekick back then. I don't even know if you remember those phones. They were like one notch up from a pager.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Amy just texting me and going, God, have you read this new Janet Fitch book? You've got to get it. And I hadn't, and she was just saying, it's one of the best books I've ever read. So I went ahead and I ordered it, and it was that's sort of exactly where it started. That was the beginning of it.
How did you decide you wanted to make a film out of it?
Well, it was a slow burn at first. You know, if I start from that moment all the way until this interview right now, that would be probably 10 years,
mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit less. You know, I read the book, and it just felt like such a cinematic, interesting, complex take on otherwise traditional story between two women. You know, it's just something you rarely get to not only read, but visualize, something that you go, oh, I could see that on a big screen. There's many times I read books that have very complicated relationships between women, and I can't imagine that becoming something for the screen. You know, but I think that's one of the most amazing parts of the art of adaptation is just, you know, one reader's vision can be wholly different than, you know, how the author originally wrote it. And that's sort of the beautiful part about it. So in this case, I really envisioned a sort of heightened version of the book, a place that the world that existed more in the emotional reality of the women than a literal reality of the women.
I understand it was not easy to get the rights from Janet Fitch for her to agree to let you adapt the novel for the screen. How did you convince her?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes, you know, and I get it. Her agent gets a call from a young actress who has fallen in love with the book, who's, you know, done some movies and TV and stuff, you know, has never written anything before, is a poet, you know, that's a plus, but her agent gets a call from this person like that agent gets a call from many people, for many books that he represents, many authors. And so he didn't make it very easy for me. You know, and he probably, coupled with that, went to Janet and said, look, you know, this girl really likes this book. I'm telling you, you know, there's no reason to, you know, get involved in this, you know, other than she's a fan of the, you know, of the novel. But you could say that for a lot of people. So really, it was kind of an instance of luck. They turned me down several times over the course of what I think was maybe 6 months to a year. And then my touring partner, my longtime poet friend, Derek Brown, who's a sort of love poet, really phenomenal performance poet who's toured all over the world and opened for the Cold War Kids and a lot of rock bands. I was in his office and I was feeling kind of low about it and talking to him about something, and I was playing with a new copy of his book that was coming out, an advanced copy. It was just sitting on his desk, and I was like flopping it over and turning it over, not thinking anything. And then on the back, as I turned it over, I saw Janet Fitch's name, and I read a quote, which was this very loving quote about his work. And I said, "You know Janet Fitch?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, she's a fan. She comes to all my shows." And I said, "Would you do me a favor?" And that's sort of where it began. So Derek emailed her and set up drinks for the three of us, and we went to this really kitschy tiki bar in Hollywood, and we all got wasted, and we're doing shots and stuff. And even then, she was still kind of distant. You know, she was like, "Oh, this is cool. I didn't know that Amber was, you know, really close with Derek. I've heard of this girl because my agent has called me about her."
Right.
So, you know, she wasn't sold that night, but she did make the mistake of giving me her address. So I started writing her letters. I said I wanted to send her a copy of my grandfather's music because my grandfather was the master violinist of the LA Philharmonic. And in the book, there's a lot of themes of classical music.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent her a copy of the CD. And then just started sending her letters, until she gave me her email address. And then I sent her emails, and I just basically wore her down over maybe 2 years, a year, something like that.
And when she finally agreed, there must have been a huge sense of relief, but also then a kind of new stress that you had to do it, to go do it.
Oh, yeah. It's a miracle any movie ever gets made, truly. You have to be so in it for the passion for the art, especially in this day and age of filmmaking, you know, an independent film. You know, there's so many roadblocks. There's so many no's you get told along the way. You know, you've just got to really be fiercely in love with something or have a very strong vision for what you want to make. No one ever gets into making films, I think, to go like, "You know what? That sounds super easy and lucrative. I'm in." It's quite the opposite. So yeah, it was a long, you know, then I co-wrote the screenplay with my friend Ed Dougherty, which actually we did that really quick. We wrote really quickly together, and it was a slow climb, very slow climb.
During earlier stages of development, or when you were first thinking about it, you were going to play Josie. What
Yes.
about the character spoke to you? Why did you want to play her?
Well, I had, as I think, you know, it's kind of the norm to hear any actress talk about in interviews, especially to talk about how hard it is to find roles for young women or women in general that mm-hmm. are complex, that are interesting, that aren't, you know, playing Jonah Hill's girlfriend or, you know, Adam Sandler's maid. Then there's sort of like no in between sometimes. And when there is, it's like, you know, you've got so many quality actresses in the business. There's so many amazing women out there that it's, you know, hard to get your foot in that door. So, of course, I wrote it with the intention of playing it just because it was such an incredibly complex coming-of-age story and, you know, filled with everything I would ever want to play in a character. And, you know, I wanted to play it. I wanted to be able to do that. And because it took so long to get the movie made, it was actually supposed to be, for years and years, it was supposed to be myself and Ben Foster playing Michael. Ben was so gracious in giving me his name, and, you know, he's been a longtime friend and saying, "I'll shepherd this, I'll help you, I'll support you, whatever you need." And his belief in the project is also, I think, another thing that just sort of pushed me along to finally get it to that place. But, you know, after a while, it just, both Ben and I are like, "We're too old." This really, there's a difference, right? There's a difference in the story between a young, naive, impressionable girl, you know, fresh in her early 20s, having this thing happen to her, having this sort of weird state of psychosis and literally almost being hypnotized. There's a difference between someone in their early 20s and someone who's almost 30. And so it was really important that I found somebody that was, you know, that was young, that could play that.
And how did you decide to cast Alia Shawkat?
Well, one of the things that was important for me, again, as someone who has been on both sides of the being cast in something because of my name and that's what gets it financed, or also not being able to get a role because my name isn't big enough. I've many, many, many times been on both sides of that spectrum. And for me, it was very important that I cast the best actress, not just the name that was on a list that was important to investors. And I felt this way, one, because it was my project. I did write it. I was producing it. I did find the solely find the financing by myself with my producing partner, Ren. But we went outside of the traditional model of going to agencies and going to companies. We went in a very non-traditional route. And so because of that, I felt I'd earned the right to find the best actress and to say, this is who I want. And I was very fortunate. You know, I read a lot of actresses. A lot of them came in and auditioned. And Alia was this kind of amazing combination of both of those things. Not only was she perfect for the role, but she also has this cool name in the business. You know, she's Alia Shawkat. She's like, you know, I think she was just shooting The Green Room when she came on to do my film, and obviously people know her from Arrested Development. And so I was very, very fortunate to say that I kind of found the perfect combination that delivered both of those things.
She delivers a powerhouse performance.
Yeah, she does.
You're of course married to David Cross, who was also on Arrested Development. Does he give you like any kind of just like, yeah, I've worked with her, she's great, you kind of like a nod that she's what you think she'll be?
Yeah, not only that, you know, I had sort of narrowed it down to three women I really liked to play Josie, and David watched all their tapes, and he was adamant. He was absolutely adamant. He said, you cannot find a better person for this character, for this role, than Alia. Not only did he say that, but my DP, the director of photography who shot the film, Brian Rigney Hubbard, had worked with her on a film. Brian had worked with her previously on a movie and said, Ali is so underrated. She can do so much, and she hasn't been tested yet as an actress. And I guarantee you this role she will chew up and spit out. She'll be great in it.
Janet McTeer plays Meredith. She's also amazing. How did you find her? How did you cast her?
You know, we had this list. Ren, my producer, and I had this list of women that we love for the film, and Janet was, of course, on there. And, you know, Janet was always the one that was like, she's so perfect for this movie, will she actually do it?
Mm-hmm.
She's so picky about her material, which is, of course, as she should be, because she's Janet effing McTeer.
Right.
you know, and so it was pretty straightforward. We sent her the script, her manager, and her manager loved it and sent it to her, and she loved it, and, you know, as anyone should or would be, especially like, you know, somebody like Janet who's never worked with a first-time director before, that's a big thing. I can remember when I did that for the first time in my career. So she wanted to meet. You know, she was like, I just want to make sure someone who's, you know, young, who's never directed before, he doesn't have a short film I can look at, didn't go to film school. You know, this is a big role. This is a big piece of acting work to chew. And so I want to make sure that I have a director that's fully can capture that. So she and I, I'll never forget it. I went to her hotel in Los Angeles. She was in town shooting something. And I went to the pool level, which was like, you know, the roof deck of the hotel. And I mean, you just can't make this up. She's sitting on a chair by the pool and sort of leaned back a little bit. And she's got this giant hat on that just looked like she was going to the Kentucky Derby with this gorgeous silk robe wrapped around her and her hair pulled up in a bun. And she just was the most gorgeous, sexy, terrifying thing I had ever seen in my life. I mean, it just stopped me in my tracks. And I remember I was so smitten with her in that moment. And then sitting there with her for over, I think, close to 2 hours, that I forgot to tell her I can't sit in the sun, and I burnt the hell out of my whole arm.
Oh, no.
I was too afraid to say anything.
Sure.
I didn't want to say, like, let's move in the shade, but I had this horrible, for, you know, weeks, burned, like peeling skin on my arm. But I just was, as soon as I saw her and as soon as we spoke, I thought, I'll pull the plug on this whole movie, on my whole dream, if I can't get her, because she's so perfect. She's so perfect, and she's so is not afraid to go there. You know, and that was the most important thing, that somebody was not afraid to go there, to be that type of a villainous woman.
So you mentioned it's your first time directing, you didn't go to film school, but you, of course, grew up not only performing, but your family, as you mentioned, your father was directing earlier, your father's Russ Tamblyn. You've been in it your whole life around it. Were there still things as you made the movie that surprised you, things you didn't anticipate, or were you completely ready through a lifetime of tangential preparation?
I think the irony is that I was certainly ready to, was prepared to hear the word no all the time. You know, that's something that you as an actress get told all the time. You know, I joke that I'm not an actress for a living. I actually just get rejected for a living. And that's the truth. You know, if you want to do this for a living, you have to be prepared to hear that, you know, 90% of the time, you know, and get accustomed to that and not take things personally. And so it was kind of really interesting to come out on the other side and be directing this film and hear the word no constantly for all kinds of things, you know, in the same way and go, really? God, I thought I'd proven myself with that. Okay, well, here we go again. So that was really interesting. But I think all of that, you know, I had such a great time on my set. And, you know, again, I had such a wonderful director of photography that took time out of his own schedule, even before pre-production, for he and I to sit down and talk about the films we love, talked about the look of the type of movie we were making. He and I were so on the same page about the style of the film that was really, you know, made things very smooth. I mean, you know, obviously with any film, I think we shot this movie in 22 days. You know, it's tough. It's really, really hard. So there are times when I would look at it and go, God, I wish I had 2 extra days so I could have gotten more footage with this or that. But overall, it was, you know, as any large experiences like that, it was a learning experience, but it also solidified for me wholeheartedly that it's something I should be doing and that it's very natural. It comes very natural to me.
You're also a poet. Does that form of creativity and expression influence filmmaking, or are they separate?
You know, I've thought about the influence of poetry in my life, in the other art forms that I'm, you know, a part of a lot. I don't think it influences acting at all, but this, I would definitely say directing and certainly even more than directing, editing. The editing process, I had to really allow myself to let go of the narrative that I had written and try to find ways to express what I wanted to say about the emotional stakes of these women and their lives without literally saying it with words. And in that way, I had to enter a sort of dream state as I was editing and sometimes forego scenes that had a lot of language in them, use things that I had, you know, not intended to use, but shot them because we thought about it, you know, on the day, in the moment. For instance, we had an extra, I think, 15 minutes one night, which was the only night we ever had that.
Sure.
I was doing a scene with Janet. She said, "Hey, I have that really pretty robe, that silk robe that we're never gonna, you know, we decided not to use. It's not gonna be in any scenes. Should we just shoot something real quick with that on?" And I said, "That's a great idea." So she went and she put the robe on, and we were at the end of a hallway, and I thought, you know what? I'm just gonna shoot Meredith drunk. I'm just gonna shoot a bunch of her being drunk in this house talking to herself. And it actually made it into the movie. And to me, it's one of the saddest parts of this lonely woman who has a bunch of ghosts in this house. And that says more to me than anything that could have been literally said with words. In that essence, poetry really informed the editing experience and made me think of ways that I could come at the same feeling but make it feel different.
Amber Tamblyn's directorial debut, Paint It Black, will screen twice at the Woodstock Film Festival. Tonight at 6:30 at the Woodstock Playhouse, and Sunday the 16th at the Orpheum Theater in Saugerties, New York at 5:30. She will also participate in the festival's Women in Film and Media panel tomorrow, that's Saturday, October 15th at 2 p.m. Other participants on the panel are Betty Gordon, Catherine Hardwick, and Mary Stuart Masterson. The panel is moderated by Thelma Adams. More information on all these events is available at woodstockfilmfestival.com, and links are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.